Hello and welcome to another episode of Inside OSU, Oklahoma State University's signature podcast. I'm Dr. Kenneth Sewell, Vice President for Research here at OSU. Our scientists and research scholars are conducting cutting-edge research in a wide array of fields, placing OSU among the nation's top tier of research universities. Even still, our amazing research can be hard for the public to know about on an everyday basis, as it's not quite as visible as OSU's highly ranked degree programs or championship athletic teams. So periodically, I host an episode of Inside OSU to raise the veil on at least one research area I think you'll find fascinating. In today's podcast, you'll sit in on a recent OSU Research on Tap event, a monthly interview show I host at Stillwater's Iron Monk Brewery. In this episode, my guest is Dr. Julie Engel, Associate Professor of Science Education. Our conversation focuses on how she helps bring together the scientists who do science with the high school and junior high teachers who teach science, and how her own research shows the transformation this creates for students. Let's join the interview.
So the goal of science education is to produce a scientifically literate populace. So what does that mean?
Populace.
A populace. We want generations of science literate individuals. So to be scientifically literate, we can break it down into three constructs. An understanding of the science content knowledge.
Obviously, if you're going to be a biologist, you got to know something about biology.
Right. Yeah. Physics, chemistry, right. Microbiology, brewery. And so also an understanding of the methods or practices of science. So how do scientists conduct their science? Okay. And then an understanding of the nature of science. So nature of science is an epistemology, or way of knowing how scientific...
Epistemology. I'm not going to ask you to spell that, but I do remember a philosophy class that we got hung up on that word for a long time. So what do you mean, epistemology?
How scientific knowledge is generated. For example, we conduct research on students and teachers' understanding of nature of science. So what does that mean? They have an understanding that science is based on empirical evidence.
Empirical.
Yes.
Like what you can see, touch, feel, data.
Data you're collecting, how it's analyzed about the natural world. So I'll come back. And then, like the tentative nature of science, we don't want people to think that science is absolute. Okay? It's as we develop a better understanding of science, as we develop a better understanding of technology, we have a different perspective of what we're studying. So we change our ideas a little bit. Science is based on an understanding of theories and laws. A lot of times people think that theories grow up to become laws.
I remember actually, I think my grade school science teacher taught us that.
I'm pretty sure my first couple years of teaching, because in chapter one of a science textbook is the scientific method. And so we now don't even put the word the in front of scientific method, it's scientific methods. Okay. So scientists have protocols that they follow, but maybe your protocol is different than my protocol.
So the notion of a law, as opposed to a theory, the law is not just a theory that's been proven?
No, and so we don't use the word proven either, because that leads to the absolute thinking of science.
So things that we thought were proven, maybe we come to question that at some point.
We can question anything. As more evidence comes forward, then we can put anything into question. Now, in order for something to become a theory or to become a law, there's a lot of supporting evidence. You know, the theory of evolution. There are some people trying to disprove or falsify the theory of evolution. And the more times they fail at it, the stronger that theory gets.
Sure. Okay. So now, I know you teach a lot of classes, and you're professor of science education, and we have teachers that are in training, trying to become teachers, and they're going to be science teachers. But in addition to working with our OSU students who are trying to become teachers, you also do quite a bit with teachers from around the state who are already in the classroom teaching science and so forth. How does that work, and what are you doing with them?
So 7-8 years ago, I started working with Rob Burnap over in microbiology, microgenetics, and he asked me to participate or to be a co-PI on an NSF grant. He said, would you help me with the broader impacts? And so I sat down with them and I said, listen.
Okay,
I said,
so people who've been part of the OSU research on TAP, she just mentioned NSF grant and broader impacts. Can anybody do our toast that we do at the end of this? So may your intellect be meritorious and your impact be broad. Those are the two criteria for getting a grant from the National Science Foundation. You have to have intellectual merit, meaning your ideas have to be really good. Scientists, we turn everything into jargon, right? But you also have to have broader impacts. So Dr. Burnap said, come help me with the my intellect is sufficiently meritorious, but I need broader impact.
So I was a high school science teacher for 25 years. 17 of those 25 years, I mentored students in research and coached them in science fair competitions.
Science fairs, okay.
And I said, I explained to him that the students that went through science fair had an academic advantage. They received more scholarships. They got to meet people from all over the world because they competed. Every year, we were fortunate enough to have one or more students qualify for International Science Fair. And I said, but teachers have to be trained to do this. And so I said, what if we come up with a research experience for teachers program, and where they conduct research with you, but I provide them professional development throughout the 6 to 7, 8 weeks in the summer.
So research experiences for teachers, that's a grant program that the National Science Foundation does?
It's a supplementary, but we were actually writing it for a regular grant, for a regular proposal.
For a regular proposal.
And this was the broader impacts of his proposal.
Okay.
So then the next year, Andrew Dowse from Plant Biology, Ecology, and Evolution said, I want to play. And so he said, I want a teacher, plus I'm going to... Oh, he's Trump you? I hate to use that word. I want to one up you, and I want a pre-service teacher. So we placed a pre-service teacher and an in-service.
Pre-service, so that's someone who's at OSU working toward
an undergraduate
becoming
that's wanting to be a science teacher. Yeah. So we call a pre-service teacher or a PST. And so then we had Burnap's one teacher and a Dowse teacher, pre-service teacher. And so the next year, Burnap said, I want one too. So now we have two and two. And then we had Polly Campbell, who is now in California, Riverside. She said, I want in on this. And so, so it's just been snowballing and snowballing.
So now we have a research experiences for teachers
program. For teachers at Oklahoma State University.
So they come in the summertime. So they're just coming here to learn about how to teach science.
So
right?
They are here for a minimum of 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
And they are in the lab all day long, Monday through Friday, except for 6 hours a week. They're with me for 3 hours on Tuesday and 3 hours on Thursday.
So in the lab, actually doing research?
Conducting research. And they're to a point that they are making major contributions to some of the research that's taking place here at OSU.
Wow.
And so then I train them how to... The research that you're doing, this is current research. Kids across the state, adults across the state are not even aware that this research is taking place.
Because it's
brand new.
What we've just proposed, what we just got funding from the National Science Foundation to do.
Absolutely.
And now they're part of that research.
So now I train teachers how to take that research and make and design a middle school or high school lesson plan. So students can mimic what's taking place in the lab.
So by bringing together the scientists with the science teachers, then you're helping those teachers turn that back into science lessons for their students.
So we're blending communities of practice. We've got science communities of practice and we've got education
because
communities
of practice.
Because
being a science teacher versus being a researcher at a university, those are pretty different roles.
They're very different roles. They're very different roles. The outcomes are very different, but yet we need each other.
Okay, so when you helping these teachers, it sounds good to me, but I'm still having trouble thinking about what that actually looks like. So rather than a teacher just using a book that their school provides for them to teach biology or chemistry or botany or physics or whatever it is that they are a science teacher of, They're using their own research that they participated in at OSU to be the basis of their classroom that they're providing.
So
what does that look like? Maybe an example or something? But
in my opinion, a textbook should not drive curriculum. Standards should drive curriculum. So then teachers go out and look for or design lessons that address those state standards or national standards, depending upon if the state has adopted.
So you're not trying to teach a textbook, you're trying to teach knowledge or teach competency.
So whether you're talking about the Oklahoma science standards or the national science standards, next generation science standards, NGSS, another slang word thrown out there, a slang phrase, it's based on three dimensions: science and engineering practices, cross-cutting concepts, and disciplinary core ideas.
Say those again.
Science and engineering practices.
Okay.
Cross-cutting concepts.
Cross-cutting concepts.
So concepts that transcend across disciplines. So if you're talking about form and function, you can talk about form and function in biology, you can talk about it in chemistry, you can talk about it in physics. And then the content. And so teachers are looking for ways to design lessons to address all three of those dimensions of science.
So you've been doing this for a while, helping these students. Your students are sometimes students here at OSU, but they're sometimes teachers who for 6 weeks are becoming students of this process, turn their research into lessons for their own students. Give us an example.
So probably the most current one, I have a pre-service teacher who this summer worked in Henry Adams' lab and under the direction of Bill Hammond. And he is doing drought tolerance. And so she...
Drought tolerance research on particular
on a pinyon pine.
A pinyon pine.
And at what point is a tree actually dead? Okay, but with climate change occurring, at what point should we just, in a sense, give up on a tree?
Right.
And so she took her research and, number one, turned it into a lesson, but used radish seeds as a model, because radish seeds can grow very quickly.
So you can do that in a shorter amount of time. Yes. Trees take a little bit of time.
A few more years.
Yeah.
And so in her lesson plan, she has students come up with their own experiment. What kind of environment do you want to expose your radish seeds to? And then collect data off of that and then compare that. So again, these students are simulating or emulating what's taking place in the lab.
So what they're, because a lab in a class, I mean, this for me is all the way through college until I was in graduate school doing my own research. A science lab meant that I went into this place that looked like a lab, but I wasn't doing research. I was mimicking somebody else's, you said, methods and practices or so. I was doing the behavior of a researcher maybe, but not my own ideas. I was just doing the stuff and seeing if it turned out like it was supposed to.
We call those cookbook labs.
Cookbook
where everybody is doing step one, step two, step three, and if you don't get the same answer as me, then one of us is wrong. That is not how.
And maybe both of us are
maybe
wrong.
Both of us. And to be honest with you, that's how I taught the first couple of years. All of a sudden it dawned on me, like, I need to teach like this. And this is when inquiry teaching was just starting to come into the
picture. Inquiry teaching.
Inquiry teaching, where students are inquiring about things. They're not just reading a step-by-step. They're actually setting up experiments, and they're conducting their own experiments, and they're choosing which data to collect and which data to analyze.
So your radish experiment that your teacher is doing, that's what that is.
That's what that is. That's an inquiry-based lesson.
Instead of just telling them what it is, setting it up in a way where they ask the questions and find out the answers.
But it's also addressing next generation science standards, where those eight science and engineering practices. So they're coming up with questions, they're coming up with hypotheses, they're setting up their own experiment, they are collecting their own data, they're analyzing it, they're drawing conclusions, and they're communicating it, whether it's in a lab report or orally to a class presentation.
That's one of the things that I think gets left out of people's conception about what doing research is. I think we often forget about that dissemination component that's very critical. So it's not just about going in the lab and doing the work, but it's also about how do you tell that story?
How do you share
that with other people so that it becomes knowledge that other people can act on and do the next experiment.
And that's another thing about the NSF, the broader impacts of the proposals that we've written, is that we are disseminating, number one, OSU researchers' research to a broader audience, a middle school, high school, so K-12 audience. I don't do science, and a lot of our scientists here do not know how to reach out to a K-12 audience. So again, it's a perfect blending of partnership.
Matches those things mm-hmm. up. Okay. Well, you said you don't do science. I mean, you don't do.
Well, like I'm not in. I don't do test tubes and you know.
But when a high school teacher moves away from this traditional methods of teaching, high school, junior high, K-12. Mm-hmm. And toward this more inquiry-based approach to their lessons, you do some research on how this impacts the students. So what does that research tell you about?
So number one, it's very difficult for the teacher because they're so used to having a textbook and worksheets. You know, I tell my students that if I walk into your classroom and there's a worksheet in front of your students, I'm going to be furious. So as I started becoming a more...
So your students all love you is what you're trying to say.
Or fear me, one of the two, you know. But so when I started becoming an inquiry-based teacher, I was very seldom in the front of the class. I was walking around, my students were talking with one another, they were actively engaged in their own learning. And my principal, on a couple of occasions, he would come by and goes, "Is there ever any learning taking place in your classroom? You're never in the front of the classroom. Your kids are always all over the place," until my students started scoring really high on the state test. And he went, "Okay, no more. I won't ask anymore."
So he equated learning with them sitting there quietly and you doing all the talking.
Yes.
And you equate learning with them asking the questions.
Asking the questions.
And going and finding the answer.
And discussing it. And yes, they could have a textbook, but let that textbook be a reference book.
And then how in that kind of context, in the inquiry-based learning context, mm-hmm. do you do that last step, the dissemination piece? Is it a written piece? Is it an oral piece?
So,
how do they learn that piece of communicating that knowledge so that other people can use it?
So my pre-service teachers and the RETs, they, number
RETs,
one.
RETs, the people in the research
experience for teachers.
Experiences for teachers.
Sorry.
I'm the acronym police in this.
In the past, we've had them just write lesson plans and then they go teach the lesson plan. We observe them teaching the lesson and we assess their teaching. How often do they mention nature of science, or how do they incorporate nature of science into their lesson? But this last summer, we had one of these pre-service teachers actually write her lesson plan up and submit it as a manuscript.
So submit it to
a peer-reviewed
journal.
Yeah.
A scientific journal?
The American biology teacher.
Wow.
So we don't know yet if it's been accepted, but she submitted it in first of October.
So learning how to even turn their experience from this process into something that can be communicated to other.
So something else we do during the 6 hours of professional development in the summer is that, like I said, I am a fan of science fair, science and engineering fair. I want to help teachers. So we're providing them with a mentored research experience. So now they're learning how to mentor their students. And then I provide them with information on how to prepare your students for competition. And so once these students are taking some of the research that's taking place at OSU, because that's where their teacher did their research, so the faculty are actually getting more of their knowledge disseminated.
Well, we have a couple of minutes. Let's talk about science fairs.
Okay, so, let's talk about science fairs.
you have, with a couple of other colleagues here at OSU, have been successful in bringing the Oklahoma Science Fair to OSU. So. Mm-hmm. Why should we care about this? I mean,
so STEM faculty, raise your hand.
STEM, what's that mean?
Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Would you like a high quality caliber student or not? That is why we should have. these are these
like
kids.
All you single people, would you like a really attractive fun partner or not, right?
We want to give these bright kids opportunities. We can give them a pigskin. They can run across a field or a basketball. I don't know what it's made out of. Anyway, go across the court. But we've got to provide students.
You're not a sports person. I can tell.
No, not. NASCAR. Ask me about NASCAR.
All right.
So.
I would not have put you as a NASCAR person.
One, I have a manuscript. It's called The Physics of NASCAR Pasta Pods. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Anyways.
Oh, I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
So we want to give these academic kids an opportunity to express themselves. And science fair. So we've now have 8 regional science fairs. We had 7 last year, and now we have 8. Tulsa came on board. And so there's probably over 20,000 kids in the state of Oklahoma who do a science fair project and compete at the local level. And about 1,200 of those will compete at one of our 8 regional science fairs. And then last March, 251 of those came to state science fair.
And that's now
here at OSU.
At OSU.
As of last
Fantastic.
Year, yeah. It, for over 40 years, it was at East Central University, and the State Department reached out and said, would you take it over?
And I don't know if I'm even supposed to announce this, because it's so new, but we are working on a process, and all the deans have agreed. Can I say this, Dean Wilson? All the deans have agreed that every one of those 251 students who come here and participate in the State Science Fair will be given a voucher for an OSU scholarship.
Wow. That is wonderful.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Engel. Some of the other Research on Tap guests have been experts on brain stimulation, E. coli, big data, alcohol use in teenagers, engineered lung models, even national dances in Spain. And there are many more to come. You can find out about future OSU Research on Tap events and attend them live. Just follow us on Facebook or go to research.okstate.edu. And you can view our archived installments on OState TV. Just go to Research in the About OSU section. And that's it for this episode. I'm Dr. Kenneth Sewell. Join us next time for another Inside OSU podcast.